Yeah, what's going on, all my new Warrior Nation members out there? This is the People's Fit Coach, Sincere Hogan, and I'm bringing to you another great call today. Of course, you know we bring some of the best warriors that are out there making things happen in the game of strength and conditioning, and, you know, today is no exception. Today I'm joined by one of the top guys in the world of kettlebell sport and strength and conditioning, Mr. Dennis Kanagin. How you doing, Dennis?
Hey, Sincere. Good to be here.
Hey, man, good to have you, brother, and I'm glad you actually had time to take out of your busy day and come spend some time with us, and we can discuss kettlebell sport, the history of kettlebell sport, and also your active role right now in helping to promote the sport, especially here in the West, here in the United States, and because it's still relatively new for most of us over here on this side of the water, and, you know, it's great to have guys like you over here and helping us out and just really, like, creating that excitement of the sport here. So, once again, thanks a lot. And I want to give everybody just a quick rundown of just who Dennis Kanagin is. First of all, Dennis was born in Russia, and he has been training with kettlebells since the age of 8, where he was formerly trained in Gervor kettlebell lifting. He has competed competitively in Russia and is now living here in the United States teaching and preaching the proper mechanics of traditional kettlebell lifting. Now, his organization, Kettlebell System, focuses on teaching the main lifts of Gervor and training for maximum strength and endurance, as well as correcting the common mistakes of the Western kettlebell training, which is what we're addressing on this call today. Just a few fun facts about Dennis. He's the author of Science of Kettlebell Sport DVD, which I'm telling you, this is a great DVD, and we'll talk about that, you know, a little later in the call, but definitely if you are really getting into kettlebell sport, getting to the training, want to start competing, and just really want to get down to the nuts and bolts of what it is to train and participate in kettlebell sport, you must pick up Dennis's DVD. You guys know that I don't recommend a lot of things. All right, and this is another one of those things that I say you must have. I refer to it continuously, especially as I get closer to competition. You know, so Dennis is, even though he's not here with me physically, he's helped me a lot just from that DVD, man. He's really helped me tweak some things. So you definitely need to run out and get that. Again, as I said before, Dennis started training with kettlebell sport at 8 years old. All right, so while most of you are still trying to put sentences together and learn your ABCs, this man was already throwing some kettlebells around. All right. So, no, without any further ado, let's just hear from the man himself. Dennis, is there anything I left out, brother, briefly about, like, who you are and where you come from?
Well, again, great to be here. And, yes, I was born in Russia. You pretty much got all the facts correct. One fun fact, I was born in August during a snowstorm. So it was quite cold where I'm from.
Okay. And did you say August?
August, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah, you're definitely from Russia. Then, oh. I mean, that proves it right there, dude.
Yeah,
so great, man. You know, I noticed something, and I visit your blog a lot, kettlebellsystema.com, and I love your blog. You get a lot of great information there, and, I mean, you share a lot of free information there that, you know, especially a lot of guys here in the West are trying to charge hundreds of dollars for. And, you know, you give a lot of great information, man, because obviously one of the reasons why we're having the call, you truly love this sport, and you really want to help people spread the gospel of the kettlebell sport. So, and I really love that, man. And one thing I saw that you posted the other day, because something kind of hit home with me, because I really have this thing about doing my part to help with childhood obesity, and you're just talking about, like, the PE programs now, especially here in the West. And one thing that I noticed is just the fact, you know, some of the suggestions you were making, and kind of going back to what you just said, you started when you were 8 years old. If I read correctly on your blog, I mean, there are, like, kettlebell classes even in elementary schools in Russia. Am I correct?
Well, yeah, it starts early on. So, now, it's not in every single school, but there are schools where the school specializes in kettlebells or some sport, and that program is offered. Now, in Russia, it's not, you don't have a separate elementary school or middle school or high school. Mm-hmm. It's all lumped together. So you have all these kids in one building.
Okay.
As crazy as that sounds, but absolutely.
Wow.
These programs are offered. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. Kind of said a lot. You know, a lot of us watch a lot of YouTube videos. We watch a lot of Russian athletes, not just in kettlebell sport, but Olympic lifting and just about any sport. And, you know, suffice it to say, I'm pretty sure a lot of us here in the West that have watched those videos and we've seen them in competitions on television, we can agree that, you know, the Russians are no joke when it comes to sports. You take it seriously, you train hard, you work hard, and anyone that's even remotely serious about competing on any level, if they're watching any Russian truly compete, man, it can be very inspiring and addictive. And I think that a lot of times that's what's missing here in our culture these days. You know, there was a time, like when I was growing up, you know, we had the Olympics. That was like the big thing for us to watch. We were waiting every 4 years for the Olympics. And, you know, you actually had real sports stars who were not so much about being individuals and being these personalities like a lot of athletes are today. But you like this collective team. It was the spirit, and it seems like a lot of that is missing now. So I think that, in my opinion, I think there's something that's really needed right now. I think that's probably one of the reasons why kettlebell sport is growing here in the States. You know, what do you think about that?
Well, I think kettlebell sport is just fun and outstanding, and it does the body good, you know, in other words. It can take you from, you know, being weak or have some kind of a dysfunctions or muscle compensations and imbalances, and creating you, making you into this really incredible athlete.
Yeah.
And actually, early on, kettlebells were linked directly with Olympic weightlifting. And when we talk about more history of how this kettlebell training and sport got started, you know, you can see how they were all lumped together. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, obviously there are a lot of the core lifts in kettlebell sport are also some of the core lifts from Olympic training. So, you know, you see that relationship between the two right there. So we were talking about, since you just mentioned the history, before we go into more in-depth of, like, why it's spreading here in the States and things like that and here in the West, let's get down to the nitty-gritty, because there's a lot of confusion out there, especially like we were discussing right before the call started. There's a lot of confusion out there as to, like, how the sport started, what is the basis of the sport, you know, what's the foundation of it. And most of the confusion is actually coming from Westerners who, like I just told you, I feel like they shouldn't even be a part of the argument because they weren't even there. It's just like it's still fairly new to them. They're newbies. So it's like, how can you even, you know, argue about, like, this is where it started, this is how it's supposed to be when, you know, it's – I mean, here you are, you've grown up with it. I mean, you've been doing it since you were 8, and there's a lot of these guys who are going back and forth and bickering about it who are like, they just started like 8 years ago, and they're like 40. You know, so like, seriously, how can you have an argument, you know, other than what you've heard? So that's why I want to get someone who was there, you know, and who's lived it and breathed it. And so basically, you just give us your point of view as far as like how the sport started, and let's go from there. So just give us a brief history of the sport.
Oh, gladly. And, you know, I often have people ask me, well, what do you do? And I say, I teach kettlebells. And they go, yeah, you know, I heard it's the new fad. Well, not so new. It is new here in the United States, and particularly in the West. But it goes back way, way back to 18th, 19th century, right? And initially it wasn't regulated, no rankings. Really no regulation, no specific technique, and it just came to just Russian guys showing off their strength. So it was, you know, they had these gatherings where, you know, guys would lift heavy tree trunks. That's what houses were made of at the time. So they would, basically, it was the way to compete and show their strength. Mm-hmm. And in about 1885, the official kettlebell training got their start. And this is where it was directly linked with Olympic weightlifting. So there was a club that was created by, at that time, famous Russian doctor Kraevsky. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, went all over the place and basically got the best Russian athletes. And he created this more consistent recorded methodology for kettlebell training, which was used to prepare athletes to improve their conditioning, their strength, their endurance, get them ready for Olympic weightlifting.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and you got some really strong guys there. They had this one guy, they called him the king of kettlebells, Елисеев. And he was the guy who could press a 32-kilo bell 86 times with the left hand, which was his weak hand.
Wow.
So it tells you about the capacity of this guy. And he would also juggle three, right? I didn't misspeak, three 32-kilo kettlebells.
Okay.
So,
wow. Okay, that's a different definition of kettlebell juggling compared to what we see now. I mean, that's true juggling right there. You know, juggling in every sense of the word. Because you said three. It's not just one that somebody's flipping around, you know, over their back and everything else. That's three of them. Wow.
Yeah. So you know, from seeing these guys, many circus acts kind of got that, you know, showmanship and took that juggling of kettlebells and cannonballs and kind of created their own act. This is why you can see it in some circuses around, you know, in Russia in particular. But, you know, that was before the Russian Revolution. And then the whole communist folks got the power. The revolution happened.
Mm-hmm.
And but kettlebells didn't die down. It was still popular, and it was especially popular in rural areas, right,
okay.
And between with fishermen and Soviet army. So still, no kettlebell sport officially, but there was a lot of, especially in the army, competitions without any rules, really guys trying to figure out who is the strongest.
Right.
And in about 1948, there was the first kettlebell competition that was created in Moscow. And the whole idea behind that was to gather the youth and try to channel them into Olympic weightlifting. Right? 'Cause that's what they were trying to do. Didn't quite work out that well because there was no ranking, there was no bragging rights, really. You couldn't say, I'm a master of sport, because no such thing existed.
Right.
So the whole sport is very, very new. In about 50s, I'm going to go by decades here.
Okay.
In about 50s, it was basically grassroots, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, the farmers, fishermen and folks from the Soviet army trained and created their own competitions, again, without really any rankings or rules. And little by little, the interest grew. And in '60s, actually in Ukraine and Latvia, this is where they started to create more and more competitions. It was really popular there. They were giving out prizes. This is where they started to record, you know, different records and keeping track of things. And around that time, they created rankings for Russian army. And this is why a lot of Russian guys, since serving in the army in Russia is mandatory, you get to about 16, you go serve for 2 years. So this is where most people get their introduction to kettlebells, and that those rankings and that goes back to 60s. Now, in about 70s, again, no regulation, just more popularity, right? People liking it. You know, same thing why you're doing it. Why I used to do it. Gets you strong. All kinds of benefits, finally the kettlebell sport became what more or less what we know it today in 85. This is when the kettlebell sport was recognized by Russian government as its own standalone sport.
Okay.
And the first competition, official competition with rankings and, you know, the whole thing was done in 1985 in Lipetsk.
Okay.
So, and, you know, in 1986, they had a second championship, and this is where, you know, a record was created. A guy named Usenko, he was in a 80-kilo category. He jerked the bells 135 times, right? So
wow.
And from that on, it just kind of kept on going.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, relatively recently, RKC and Pavel introduced kettlebell training to the West, and then came along World Kettlebell Club and Fedorenko, and he introduced kettlebell sport. And from that on, it, I think, opened a lot of doors, and I'm very grateful that those gentlemen did what they did. It allows me to, you know, to teach what I know and share what I know. So briefly, that's the history of kettlebell sport.
Oh, wow. So not bad for a fad, huh? So, man, I mean, thank you so much. I mean, rarely do we ever have the opportunity to actually get, like a timeline of history, like decades and era by era, you know, to leading up to where we are now. Because, honestly, like I said, it's just the popularity is just really blown through the roof in these last few years here in the West. That it, most people, yeah, it just seemed like it just popped up out of nowhere. You know, so it took a minute to get over here. But I can almost say there's one thing I usually hear when it comes to, like, the music industry, and, you know, because that was, like, the field I was in long before I got into fitness. One of the things I used to hear from a lot of my friends overseas, they would love to come over here and DJ or perform and release their records here in the States, because outside of the United States, a lot of people feel that if they can make it here, they can make it anywhere. They've made it. You know, so if that is true, you know, with that line of thinking, I'm starting to feel that, you know, I think kettlebells and the culture as well as the sport, I think it's going to make it. Well, I mean, I really feel that way. And of course, because it's so young, it's going to be, you know, some discrepancies here, some disagreements, and, you know, it's just going to be some things where people still trying to hash out, like, you know, what it's about, as with any new culture, to another culture, you know, until we
Absolutely.
Get some kind of understanding and we go to the source, and that's what we're doing right now. So, you know, like I said, I appreciate that history lesson right there, because we needed that. A lot of us really did hear that, and it's quite interesting when you think about it. And I love history, man. I mean, this is one of my majors in college, so I just love hearing all that, because I can actually see the timeline and see, like, you know, during the whole Russian Revolution in the early 1900s, and I think one of the benefits of the fact that they allowed the citizens, they still were able to participate and still, you know, participate in kettlebell sport, even though it wasn't so much of a sport during that time period. Whereas a lot of countries, when they go through revolutions, you know, some of those things get cut out. I mean, case in point is, like, you know, capoeira, you know, which is a Brazilian martial art. You know, that for a while, you know, they had to regulate the slaves with that. You know, and pretty much if any slave was caught doing that, you know, there's serious repercussions for that. So it took a while before that became, like, one of those national sports or martial arts of South America. So, you know, big thanks goes out to Valeri Fedorenko and Pavel Sasolin for bringing, you know, help and just really promote the culture of kettlebells here in the West. And big props to coaches like yourself who are also, you know, adding their perspective to it as well. So, you know, big thanks to that. Now, I hate to kind of, like, flip-flop around just a little bit, but, you know, we were just talking about the Olympics and how, you know, during, like, the 50s, right around the era around the 50s and the 40s, they were trying to use kettlebells and the kettlebell sport with the youth to kind of transition them over to the Olympics. Now, there's been a lot of talk in probably the last couple of years, especially as we get closer and closer to the next Olympics, that one of the things that is being really pushed is to get kettlebell sport introduced into the Olympics. And I'm wondering, like, what have you heard as far as that, as far as the progress of that suggestion?
Well, I really hope it can happen. I don't know if it's going to happen by next Olympics, but hopefully, you know, within next 10 years or so, we can achieve that. And it just comes down to everybody talking to each other and creating a common standard so that we can have a common set of rules and regulations,
right.
Common rankings that we can all agree upon, and you know, have enough participating countries that then we can take all this information, take it to the Olympic Committee and say, look, you know, we have something good here. If curling can make it to Olympics, I think
I say the same thing all the time. It's just like whenever we even discuss this, you know, amongst ourselves, like with other coaches or just even with students and clients who really get into the sport, and we start talking about just the possibility of the Olympics. And the first thing I always say is like, look, dude, if curling can make it, come on. I mean,
well,
seriously.
Yeah, no disrespect for curling.
No.
But I think it's just creating the common set and everybody going with it. And at this point, of course, the leader is Russia.
Right.
There is no competition there. So, you know, it's just waiting a bit and having more and more people participate, learn proper lifts, right? Because when I go to, you know, here at any sporting store here, they have kettlebells.
Yes,
but
yeah.
Most often it's a kettlebell the size of a man's fist with a huge handle, which is a comp. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, we call those kegelbells.
Yeah, which is accompanied by a DVD with some hot girl doing tricep curls with it.
Or she's doing step-ups with the kettlebell in her hand.
Or something along. I look away in. I think there's people hear, oh, kettlebells, and a lot of gym owners feel like they get this question often enough where they feel they need to have kettlebells in their gym, but a lot of people have no idea how to use it and how to train with it and how to teach others.
Yeah.
So this is why, now this is my goal and mission of my organization is to teach proper technique and really educate about history, about what it really is, and about the benefits that it can bring if done right.
And, you know, I actually think that by learning, you know, a lot of times we see something we think is cool, and then we pick it up, and then next thing you know, we get this feeling, you know, first of all, something new. And then, first of all, you discover something yourself, like, oh, wow. You know, I just take, for example, when someone picks up a kettlebell, and they do a kettlebell swing, hopefully properly for the first time. You know, there's just something about that, especially if you've been someone who's had injury throughout your training career, or you're someone who just got off the couch, or you've been going to the gym for a long time and you're bored with it. You're tired of the treadmill. You see nothing going with that, and you're not really getting the results you're looking for. And so you're trying to find this happy medium. Like, I need to find some type of cardio, but at the same time, I need to strength train, because 9 times out of 10, when you're here in the States, if you strength train, it's because someone, like your doctor, told you need to start strength training. And other than that, no one's trying to hear it, especially a lot of times, you know, a lot of women are afraid to pick up a weight because they feel like they're going to get bulky. But the first time they pick up a kettlebell and they swing that bad boy, you know, next thing you know, you're feeling things that you normally haven't felt when you were in that gym, when you were sitting in that machine or you were lying down on that bench. You know, next thing you know, you're doing a swing, and not only is your heart just racing, but all of a sudden you feel muscles in your butt, you know, in the back of your legs. And then you feel things in the front of your legs. You feel your arms, you feel your chest, you feel your back. And all the while, it's like your whole body is doing something, and all of a sudden you're like, what is this? And next thing you know, you put it down, you look at it, because we usually do that with something strange. We put it down, we kind of stare at it, like, who are you? Who are you? You kind of have this orgasmic experience with this kettlebell. You're like, you almost just want to smoke a cigarette after, you know, you do that first swing, like, wow, I think I love you. So, and you pick it back up again, and it's like, okay, wow, I think I love these things. And I think the beauty of it, especially for women, is that it's, okay, at first, if you look at competition, it might be a little intimidating because they're all the same size, you know. But the thing is, when they pick it up and realize that, okay, this pink belt or this blue belt is not necessarily the same as that red belt over there that's super-duper heavy, and they realize they can start doing things. And I think the beauty of it all is the fact that kettlebells can give you that second chance or your first chance to be an athlete no matter what age you are. Because you are truly being an athlete. You are totally using your body in so many different ways. I mean, what do you think? Do you agree or not?
You know, you're preaching to the choir. I 100% agree with you. It gives you the endurance, the strength, works your body all in one piece, all as one unit, as it meant to be worked. And moreover, just talking from, I guess, more of a postural therapy perspective and talking from the alignment and muscle balance, you know, a lot of us are off in that way, having a lot of imbalances because of our inactivity and ever-increasing inactivity, right? A lot of computer work, a lot of sitting down, and so that messes up our posture, right, and ingrained improper muscle memory. So we move in the wrong way, basically, that causes lots of pain in the joints later on. So what kettlebells do is they teach your body, teach your mind how to move in the right way. You get spinal flexibility. You get flexibility and better range of motion in your joints, not to mention muscle tone and better balance. So it's a really great tool, not to mention it's cost effective.
Yeah.
Unlike Olympic weightlifting or climbing the rope or CrossFit type of workouts, you know, you need a facility, you need a lot of equipment. With bells, you need a couple hundred dollars worth of kettlebells, and you have same tools as the pros do, which you can really take that as far as you want and create, and this is whether you're interested in competing or not, but doing these lifts will definitely increase your quality of life.
Yes, definitely. I totally agree with that. And one of the things that I want to touch on, and thank you for that, one of the things I want to touch on also is that with the growing popularity of kettlebells and kettlebell sport and just kettlebell training in general, what you find now is that you were talking about these core lifts. What you find now is like a lot of DVDs and all these other trainers, despite whatever, just to get people moving and keep them interested in exercise, not just kettlebell itself, there's a lot of emphasis on muscle confusion. But I think the real emphasis is on confusion, you know. So trust me, kettlebell sport is, you know, is not being left out of this as well. Well, not just kettlebell sport, but kettlebell training in general is not being left out of the mix of this whole confusion thing. And from where I stand, there's a lot of exercise confusion going on inside the kettlebell world. So
sure.
My thing is, what are your thoughts on the core lifts that we were speaking about? And if you don't mind, just kind of touch on those core lifts, as well as a lot of these commodity-type lifts, these novelty lifts that just pop alike. It's just so many different things going on out there, and I'm not even going to lie to you. You know, in the very beginning, there were some things that, there were some things that I would do differently just to be different. You know, I got caught up in it, because there were so many people doing the same old stuff, and not necessarily the core lifts, but it's just like, just to kind of separate myself from the same boring trainers and show that I'm not a trainer, I'm a coach. And, the thing is like I would try to find something different that hit a different body part or hit it in another way. And not to say that that's necessarily bad, but at the same time, I would always emphasize whenever I would do that, okay, this is for the advanced. Make sure you learn the core exercises first. So I would go on record and do that. But a lot of, like I call these trainers, ass clowns, who just, and I say ass clowns because, they think like asses because they feel like their way is the only way, and they're clowns because they're coming up with stuff that should be in a circus, so there are a lot of ass clowns out there who are just really just making up stuff, and they don't throw that disclaimer saying that, okay, yes, I'm having fun, but at the same time, I've learned my core stuff, and that is the foundation of my training, but they rather seem like, no, you got to do this, you got to sit there and stand on one leg and juggle a kettlebell over your head and, and do a one-legged squat and, yeah, if you want to die and get a concussion. So, my thing is, like, what are your thoughts on the whole core lifts versus the novelty lifts? Is there time and place for, the novelty lifts? And also, again, just explain, like, what those core lifts are and why they are important, before, especially to someone who's just now starting to train in kettlebells.
Oh, absolutely. Well, this is going to cover a lot of ground.
Great.
Absolutely. But we have three main competition lifts, which is kettlebell snatch, where you have one kettlebell and you, in a swinging movement, bring all the way to lockout over your head.
Mm-hmm.
That's one competition lift. Other one is a kettlebell jerk, where guys do it with two kettlebells and women do it with one. And side note here, in Russia, women do snatch only, so they stay away from jerk lift.
Okay.
And jerk lift, you have two kettlebells, around your chest in the rack position, and you bring those kettlebells overhead in a specific way, and that's another competition lift. And the third one is the long cycle jerk, or simply long cycle as it referred to here, and it is basically clean and jerk, where you bring the bells, in a swinging movement down, then bring them back into the rack position, and then jerk the bells above your head. So people compete in those three lifts, where snatch and jerk are lumped together as a biathlon, and you compete in both, and you generate some points, and then they're all added together, and you have your score. Or people compete in a long cycle jerk, which is a standalone event, and however many reps you do, that is your score. And in many competitions, people choose to do both,
mm-hmm.
and with some pretty impressive results. So, those are the core lifts, kettlebell sport lifts, which those participating try to learn and learn the technique and do well in. Now, when you get a total beginner, I usually, it's difficult to teach the whole lift all at one time.
Right.
You've seen my DVD. It takes me quite a bit of time just to show one lift.
Right.
In my workshop, it takes a day, and that's just kind of an overall, presentation. To master it, it takes a lot longer. So when you have a student coming in, you don't start doing snatches or jerks right away. You do assistance exercises and assistance drills. For example, swing is an assistance drill for snatches. Right? So you break it down into different phases, and before you can snatch the bell, you should be able to swing it and press it, and make sure that your overhead alignment and strength is good, and ensures that your shoulders can handle it. So I think what's been initially introduced is those beginning stages of kettlebell sport training, where you take the novice or new student, and you start with assistant exercises. They start pressing the bell. They start swinging the bell, doing upright rows, some squats, just to get their overall foundation in order, right? Because it's much more challenging to jerk two kettlebells if you can't press it, right? One comes before the other.
Mm-hmm.
So generally, in the first 3 months or so, my students do just that, assistance work, where they create their foundation,
right.
Which includes running, and that really depends on the individual student. Some have a lot of strength but lacking endurance, so we work on the endurance. Some have endurance but lack strength, so then we work with exercises that develop strength. And of course, meanwhile, we do drills that teach or teach them proper technique, or kind of lead them to proper technique with some lighter kettlebells, so that the strength and the overall foundation gets developed, and then the transition to kettlebell jerk, or let's say, is much easier, right? They're not going to injure themselves. Their back is going to be strong and flexible. Their shoulder joints have the proper range of motion and strength to hold the bells overhead.
Okay.
So that's generally the process. So I think in many cases, what's been introduced initially is those beginning stages, and it's easier to teach, and it's much safer, but it doesn't quite get you all the way to where you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why many people seek out more, and you know, that's okay. Now, as far as novelty lifts, like you know, the windmill or Turkish get-ups,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't think there is anything wrong with it. You just have to be careful, knowing what it works, what it doesn't work, and using it in the right place at the right time. I think that those exercises have their place, especially in the sort of the beginning section of the training, where a person needs to develop their overall strength, endurance, and flexibility.
Okay. Okay. Thanks a lot for that. It helped clearing that up a little bit. Truly appreciate it.